we have Maurice Michalowski joining us once again. Good afternoon to you, Maurice.
And good afternoon to you.
Now, Maurice, last week on the program, I was talking about Google Ocean and how they were claiming that there were claims being made by claimants that claimed that they had discovered where Atlantis was. You were across this story because it was enough to make me go up to 78 Records and get a compilation of Donovan so I could play his track Atlantis, and I don't know whether I'll ever use a CD again.
Absolutely. Well, I can claim to be on top of it.
Nice place to be on top of the ocean.
Well, yes. Now, Google, with their Google Ocean, which is that wonderful mapping system that allows you on your desktop to go anywhere on the planet, and in this case under the sea, and it's been around for a few years, claims that on one of their latest findings, they think they may have found something that might claim to be Atlantis.
Now, I know you're a touch cynical more so than me, and I maybe because you're a futurist and I'm just a naive pastist or something like that, but do you reckon it's something to promote the fact that Google Ocean is out there and we're actually doing their job for them right now, Maurice Michalowski?
The cynical part of me says, wouldn't that be interesting if that was the case? It just seems that we're wanting to promote Google Ocean, and they found the Atlantis city, which is something like a holy grail for all of us.
We've
talked about since we were kids, and I'm sure long before talked about as well. But having said that, they have found something. You know, they talk about 620 miles off the coast of northwest Africa. They've found something that has grids that looks like it's been laid down by a person, perhaps. In other words, not random. And they're going to go out and explore what it might be.
And do you think they might discover what it really is on the 21st of the 12th, 2012?
Oh. Well, if it's a day later, perhaps it won't matter.
That's exactly right, because that's the date of the end of the world, isn't it?
Well, according to some, yes.
According to the Mayans.
Yes.
Well, you never know. Atlantis may have been a Mayan civilization.
Well, it may well have been. I mean, it would be fascinating if it was true, wouldn't it?
In fact, why don't we start the rumor now, given that the Mayans were in South America, in that sort of bit that joins South America and North America, mm-hmm. around there,
yeah.
And that's sort of across the sea towards where this Atlantis has been found near the Canary Islands.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm now going to say, do you know what Maurice Michalowski told me last week? He told me that the Mayans actually set up Atlantis.
I've heard that.
But just talking about Google, Google itself, it just keeps on getting bigger, doesn't it?
Oh, it does, and they just have more and more tentacles. They're trying to get into everything. Now, Google brought out this week, they announced something called Google OnePass. Google OnePass, we talked a couple of weeks ago about online publishing and whether it was going to work or not, and one of the issues around it was the ability to be able to get money from people. Google OnePass is an attempt at doing that. What they've said is they want to set up almost like a PayPal, so a centralized banking system. And with this banking system, you and I will subscribe to Google One, and when we want to go to an article, when we want to read a newspaper, whenever we want to do something in that space, we'll use our Google One account to do it. So in other words, all of those publishers don't need to worry about the money part of it, because Google One will take care of it.
So they'll be a bank, in other words, won't they, really?
Yes, well, actually, Google is a bank.
Is it really?
Google actually owns a banking license somewhere in Europe. I've forgotten where. But they bought that many, many years ago because one of their intentions was always to become a quasi-online bank.
Oh, dear.
So strangely, it's been something they have worked on. It must be at least 7 or 8 years that they've been hatching something like this.
How big are the people behind Google? Are they whiz-bang wonder kids too, or what, Maurice?
I think so. Look, Google's main claim to fame is that they really are able to innovate. They're able to see things that the mere mortal like me just can't envisage. They do really clever things, like they get together 16-year-olds, meaning that they get together people that have a vision of what the world will be, and ask them what should be invented, and then they try to do that. They put together some really good innovative teams. They have a culture, and this seems to be more of a myth than a reality, but they have a culture of 20% of their workers' time is meant to be spent innovating. In other words, not doing their day-to-day stuff, thinking about what else can be done for Google.
Now, Maurice, do you do that yourself? Because I know I put about 99% of my time into thinking about what I could do, if only I wasn't so lazy.
Well, I call it daydreaming.
Yeah, I think that's closer to the truth. 8:82, 6 p.m. Talking to Morris Mizalowski, our futurist. And, of course, you can always get Morris to come and speak. He is a business futurist, a professional speaker, entrepreneur. His address is morris@businessfuturist.com. And the Morris and the business both have capital B's, or www.businessfuturist.com. Now, just on PCs and Google, I really wanted to look up Google Ocean this past week, but my computer has been in at the doctor's.
Oh.
So I've been without a PC for a week. Now, I just couldn't imagine being forever without a PC, but people are talking about that the days of the PC could be numbered anyway, Morris.
They absolutely are. The PC is, we know it anyway, the PC being the big box that we have attached to a screen. And that kind of thing, they're talking about it very much disappearing. There's a figure being touted over the last couple of months that only about 4% of what most of us average people use it for needs to be done on the traditional type PC. The rest of it can quite happily be done on a smartphone or on an iPad or some other thing.
But I can't read those smart pads and iPhones.
Well, that's true. That's why there's always 3 or 4%. But the form factors of those anyway are changing. I mean, the iPad really is only a form of a tablet, and there's been a lot of work on tablets in the last 6 months, and we're going to see a lot of them in the next 12 months. Some of them much bigger than the ones we've got, some of them smaller. And the same with the phones. We're going to see different sizes, different variations. But there's been a lot of talk around mobile phone in the last week because the Barcelona mobile phone show just finished, or it's better known Mobile World.
I saw a bit of that in the paper. Do you wish you were there?
I do and I don't. It's an interesting one. I don't specialise very much. I mean, I don't specialise in mobile phones, just what they can do. So it's very much geared towards that. Look, it's a fascinating show. I hope to get there one day. Haven't made it yet.
Talking about shows, Paul Murray does a morning show here Monday to Friday at 8:82, 6 p.m. And he's right into his smartphone because he was talking about the National Broadband Network. And I guess in many ways he was saying, are we really going to need it given that we have these smartphones anyway? But surely a smartphone couldn't compete with the National Broadband Network as far as speed goes, could it?
Well, it can. It really does depend on what we're going to use it for. The National Broadband is very much about putting cable, about putting something physical between our computer and the other end. And most of our smartphones now are using wireless technology.
But I heard a bloke talking to Paul, who seemed to me to know what he was talking about, and he was saying that with wireless, though, the more people you have on wireless, the more cluttered it becomes, and so therefore the slower it becomes.
That can be true, but we're going to 4G in the next year or so, which is the next incarnation, when 3G...
4G, can you explain it more to me?
Well, 3G is the recent incarnation, or the one that we're using for our mobile phones.
Yeah.
4G will be the next one. It means
what's a G? G bytes or G bungs or G wizards?
No, it actually just is the word G. As far
I see. So we're going to have four of whatever the G stands for?
Whatever it is. Now, so really the G is just generation. It doesn't stand for anything in particular. But what it does mean is it's the next iteration. Now, we're going to see a much faster speed, so it'll work much faster. We'll be able to download video and audio and all of that, watch it on the fly, as we will become more and more used to doing. If we want to get technical, the download speeds are going to be 100 megabytes per minute, which is much higher than we have now. So as technology increases, the speeds will increase as well, and the congestion that you talked about, yeah, I think will become less and less of an issue. When you think about it, right now we have 5 billion, with a B, 5 billion connected mobile phones worldwide for a population of 6.2 billion.
Gee, so it's pretty cluttered anyway.
Yeah, in Australia we have a population of 22 million, with an M, but we have 24.2 million connected handsets.
So I love the way you just roll that off your tongue there, Morris.
So we are really cluttered as we go now, meaning that most of us really don't notice it anyway. You know, apart
and
from
isn't it interesting how we want all this technology to work quicker than it is now? We're an impatient bunch, aren't we?
You're absolutely right. It was fascinating. I was speaking to people during the week about that too, that not so long ago we used to wait for couriers to arrive and take them 2 days to do it. We talked about old telex machines.
Yeah.
You know, all those things which we thought were really fast. But again, compared to today, you're absolutely right. We just seem to want it before we've even sent it.
Now, last week or the week before, a couple of weeks ago actually, we were talking about things that have disappeared to a certain extent and we haven't really noticed. And whenever I've been with people, I've said, when was the last time you received a fax?
Yes.
And I said, I've been speaking to you and how you pointed this out to me. And Morris, it is so true.
Isn't it? It really is scary.
It is scary.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it has gone by the by. Again, perfect for its time, but now we just have moved on to something faster.
Now, Morris, if people wish to fax you, you don't have a fax anymore, so how do they get in contact with you?
Well, they could use the old snail mail, or they could phone, or more important, they could email.
Mm-hmm. And the address is...
If you want to email, it's Morris at businessfuturist.com.
Or
just go to the website, which is businessfuturist.com, have a hunt around and find contact me.
And I thoroughly enjoy going to you every Sunday afternoon on the weekend. Morris Mesolowski, our regular regular guest, our futurist. Thank you once again, Morris.
My pleasure. Have a great week, everyone.